Hi, my name is Butch, and I'm an alcoholic. And that was, once I understood what alcoholism was about, and I met you guys, and you talked to me about how you drank and how you looked at life before you got here, and since you've been here, it's really nice to be able to say that about myself, you know, to discover what the heck was really going on with me all my life. Because I was always looking for something, you know, something that I didn't know what it was. And it's really a good feeling to finally get a clue about what's going on with me. And as elusive as that is, it's still good to get that. My sponsor told me to tell the truth, so I'll do that the best I can. I was over there a couple weeks ago. Marcin and I split a pitch, and I was thinking about, before you talk, you think about, what can I say, you know, or hopefully you don't think that, but you do anyway. And so I mentioned to my sponsor how it'd be nice I'd give a talk on understanding Al-Anonism, you know. And my sponsor, just kind of looked at me, and he gives me his kind of look and his gentle smile, and he just says, well, why don't you just speak on a subject you know something about? So, okay, fair deal. So I decided to just come tell the truth here. I kind of, you know, I was already getting a piece of literature ready and everything, you know, I thought I'd make a nice one to get some people's attention. Anyway, you know, like I was saying, I didn't know I was an alcoholic, you know, up until I met some people from AA, you know, after I'd been beaten up enough by alcohol to listen. I'm one of 9 children. I have 6 sisters and 2 brothers, and we're raised Catholic religion. And I've since moved from that. But anyway, you know, I've always been a real selfish, self-centered, you know, overreact to situations, and no coping skills, you know. Other than that, you know, I had life wired. but, you know, I never knew any of this stuff. I never took the time or was able to take the time to look back at my life on how I looked at what was going on with me. You know, something would happen, and it would be, you know, either a disastrous outcome or something, and then I would always just, instead of taking the time to look at it like I can do now, I'd just move on to the next thing, you know, and consequently I never learned much other than life became more and more painful the longer I was in it, and consequently the more I wanted out of it. You know, I needed a drink as soon as I was born, actually, I think would have been a really good idea. My first remembrance of being alive is my family, some of my sisters, I guess, had gone down to Mexico with my parents or one of my parents, and I remember just being in the closet, you know, walking out of this dark closet in the bedroom and being angry at these people, resenting them, because I didn't get to go. You know, it doesn't matter that I was too young to go or whatever, but I still just, that was my first remembrance of being around my family, was resenting them and feeling alienated from them. You know, I didn't realize that was a feeling at the time. At the time, I just was pissed and just felt anxious, you know, and that's just the way I went on with my life. I never, you know, knew I had a resentment. Didn't even know what that was, you know. That's a really interesting part of getting sober is you guys speak an entirely different language than I ever heard, you know. I had all kinds of words to learn to fit what was going on with me, and thank God you were here for me, you know. Anyway, I went through that one, and you went along, and I went to kindergarten. And that was my first experience with what I like to call the outside world. And went to kindergarten the first day there, and went along through the day, and then it was nap time in the afternoon, and everyone, you know, went to take their nap, and I stood up and took off all my clothes but my underwear, you know, and I was the only one that did that, and they all thought it was hilarious, but I didn't think it was too funny, you know. I spent the rest of the day crying and feeling sorry for myself, and I never went back, you know. That was kind of my MO. I never went back again. You know, consequently, my mom, who was a little burnt out on all those kids, you know, we had to go somewhere as we got older, and so I started going to work with my dad, and he was a plastering contractor at the time, and so I got to, you know, go around and see those guys, the plasters with the pint in the back pocket and the snuff and all that stuff, and I was around that, and, you know, the crap games and the garages and all that. I thought it was kind of neat, you know, it was interesting. But, you know, as I got older, it was time to go to grade school. You know, the first grade, we lived across the street from a school and on 60th and Crenshaw there. We lived in Los Angeles at the time. And, you know, I'd seen, my sisters went there, and I'd seen what went on over there. You know, they just go across the street and go to school and go about your business, and there's nuns over there. And all that stuff. And so I'm over there with my uniform on and my first day of school, and the bell rings. As soon as the bell rang, I got this knot in my stomach. I was gone, right across the yard, across the street, and in the house. And you should have seen the look on my mom's face. You know, here he is again. One more time. I'm standing there, you know, and I didn't understand all this fear that I had. I didn't know where this stuff came from. I mean, I just was going to go to school. And then when the bell rang, something went off inside me, and I just had to split. I went back, though, you know, the next day. Enough was enough for my mom there. And I went back and started going to school and, you know, meeting the nuns and doing all that. And I got introduced to the, you know, the Catholic religion there. You would talk about God and all that. And I really liked the feeling I would get when I would, what I like to call, I guess, hook up with God. You know, like when I was doing what was right and, you know, I got a real good feeling inside me. But it also started a lot of conflict as I got older because it became harder and harder for me to do what I thought was necessary to deserve to have God on my side, I guess, is more or less it. You know, there's a lot of rules and, you know, the way I looked at things, it was, you know, I had to be perfect in order for God to love me. You know, and the longer I was, the older I got, the harder that was to do, and it became a real conflict. You know, on the one hand, I had the real good feeling I got when I felt like I was doing right, and then the impossibility of doing that all the time. And, you know, I guess that's pretty standard thinking, as it goes. Anyway, you know, went through grade school and no big events. You know, just kind of went along and did my best to not get in too much trouble. Went to high school. Had to go to Catholic high school. Went to a Catholic boys' high school, and they had brothers there. And it was the same kind of thing as the nuns. You know, they were tell you how much God loved you, and they'd smack you. You know, it's pretty intense. You know, and. I just, you know, had a lot of conflict with that. Man, this is confusing, you know. Just real confusing to me. I started drinking somewhere in my freshman, sophomore year, I guess. Somewhere in there we just started going down the beach. I lived at the beach and we used to surf and some of the older guys' brothers would be able to buy us something to drink. So we'd go down to Hermosa Beach and get a quart of Country Club malt liquor and try and drink that and get home back to Manhattan Beach without throwing up or getting arrested. That was our activity for the weekend, the start of our drinking. And it was fun. I mean, when I took my first drink, it wasn't, you know, no bells went off or anything for me. I just was trying not to throw up, you know. And but I liked the idea of being able to, I guess, get away with something, you know. It's just kind of like my own little deal. And I like that. A couple years later, we started adding drugs to our alcohol. And, you know, and away we went. You know, and the longer I drank, and I found that kind of took a lot of the edge off of what I've been feeling all my life. You know, slowly it's worked its way into being really comfortable for me. And consequently, I wanted to do it all the time, you know. It's progressive. And I discovered I have a real dislike for any kind of responsibility, you know. I developed the wonderful philosophy that, you know, life should be just, you know, you can sit around and smile. That's, you know... Why not, you know? Sometimes you bring over food for you to eat and sit around and drink, and then you sit around and smile, and everything's wonderful. That was kind of my philosophy for living. It doesn't work very good, you know? So, you know, I would work and get a good feeling from work, and then I would, you know, work would be finished, and I collect unemployment as long as I could, you know? And then when I run out of unemployment, I go back and go to work again, you know, and I like that. But like I was saying, the periods of being unemployed were more and more to my liking. So I used to sit around and resent not having a lot of money so I could do that full time. And so, you know, the world was wrong one more time with me. And, you know, kind of went on from there. You know, I would try to achieve some good stuff and then, like I say, go on and do something else. Yeah, the drinking was getting... kind of powerful there, and that one time I traded a panel truck or something, or painted a car. Yeah, a panel truck for a car and a motorcycle. And I started riding this motorcycle around, and this girl was hitchhiking one day, and I picked her up, and I fell in love, you know, being such a deep person at the time, such a relationship person, you know, that's just the way I was, pretty shallow guy, but it's the best I could do, and. She got pregnant, and then we had to get married because her dad said you had to go into service or get married. And being the yeah, Well, gee, let me see, you know. I can stay home and have sex whenever I want, or I can go into service. So, a real moral, real complicated decision there for me. And so we got married, and we had a daughter by that marriage, and but it only lasted like, you know, like a year. And when that broke up, I looking back, I used that as a real excuse to drink and use. Oh, poor me, you know. Oh, I'm separated from my wife. She has the baby, and I'm all on my own, and all that. She left me, and blah, blah, blah. You know, I never looked at the fact that, you know, I was just plenty screwed up, and we didn't have anything going on relationship-wise anyway. I don't blame her for leaving. I'd have left. I wouldn't even married me in the first place, but, you know. But anyway, I used that in my drinking for a long time. You know, whenever I'd be feeling down, I could always fall back on that to feel even worse. You know, and so I did. You know, and consequently, my drinking got heavier, and right along with the self pity, and the disease progressed. You know, less and less work, more and more alcohol. I was bouncing around doing that for a while, and every so often I get, you know, every so often you recover from your disease a little bit, you know, and you try and pull it back together and make some sense of things, and. This one time, my sister lived in Alaska, and she said, you can come up there and you can go to lumberjack camp, and, you know, you can save some money because there's nowhere to spend it. They put you on an island, and I thought, well, okay, maybe this would work, you know, maybe get ahead somehow. And so I went up there, and I never did make it to lumberjack camp. her father-in-law was a bartender at the Sourdough Bar and Grill. Right there in the water in Ketchikan, and you know, the bars there are open till like 5 a.m, and then they close for an hour and a half while they clean up, and then they start over again. And I used to sit in there and get about every other drink free, and that was fun. You know, that was my drinking was working back then still to some extent, and I enjoyed it up there. I worked in the pulp mill for a while they had up there, and then, you know, got introduced to Everclear up there. That's 190 proof grain alcohol. It's kind of tangy, make you a little hoarse, you know. We used to drink with Nesbitt's orange juice. It was different. And they used to water drinks with it up there, you know, and they all sit around and feed it to the poor Indians up there and watch them fight each other. The entertainment was really different up there than around here. It was a different cultural deal. Anyway, you know, I was up there for a while and came back down here and kind of started doing the same thing I was doing before I went to Alaska to get away from all that stuff, you know, and, you know, the drinking and just not feeling, you know, just feeling dissatisfied with myself. And a friend of mine was working in Point Loma down south, hanging drywall. And so I figured, well, I'll go down there and work with him for a while. So we were down Point Loma, and he used to go on the weekends down to Tijuana, a real resort spot, and spend his weekends down there. So I started going down with him, you know, and then we were bouncing around there, hanging out with those wonderful women in the bars there, you know, real classy guy. And so we decided, you know, well, let's do something really good, but make a real move here. And we decided to move down to Tijuana. And so we moved to Tijuana down by the boat ring there. And, you know, talk about stupid. I mean, I can't even relate to people who speak English, you know. And then I go and move to Mexico where they speak Spanish so I can really get out of it, you know. It was just bizarre. It was real painful, you know. But I knew no way out of it. I didn't stay there too long, you know, probably a month or so. It's really hard to remember, to tell you the truth. And I came back up here for a visit, and my ex-wife's sister overdosed on drugs and alcohol and died, and I just kind of floundered around up here and started running around with some of her friends, and you know, I like hanging out with the biker type guys because there's no question about why you were there. You know, I was just there to get as loaded as I could and not be messed with, and that was fine with them, you know, and it was fine with me. You know, started getting into a little bit of, you know, along with my alcohol, I always took the drugs. I started getting into a little recreational heroin shooting at the time, you know, and that was fine with me, too. I was pretty down, you know. I'd get in these spots where I just didn't care, and that was all right, you know, at the time. It scares the hell out of me looking back at it now, because I really like being alive, you know. And that was real. All that, you know, drinking so much is real. When as it progresses, it's so close to being dead all the time. And I'm really grateful for this program. Anyway, went into that for a while, and somewhere in there I caught hepatitis real bad and was, you know, sitting around the house recovering from that. And my brother's girlfriend knew a gal who had just broken up, and so we set up a blind date, and that's where I met Larsine. You know, as soon as I saw her, you know, there's something special about her. I just, right off the bat, you know, I felt comfortable with her, and that's not usual for me unless I'm really, like, loaded or something, and I wasn't that day. We went out and had a nice date, and, you know, and here we are. You know, almost 25 years later, we're still together, and it's fantastic. The reason we're still together is because of these programs that we both work. You know, that's what's really saved our butts and brought us together, because it was pretty hairy and scary at the end of my drinking for me, and I imagine it was, well, we've talked about it, it's just as bad for her, having to live with the maniac, you know, the maniac in the house. And we were together a while, and we got pregnant. It used to be nice to be able to blame them for everything, wasn't it? We got pregnant and had a son, and then we got married, and you know, up till the time we got married, you know, I never heard anything about the way I drank, you know. And then as soon as we got married, it was, you know, she had this real weird philosophy about now that we're married, I should go to work on a regular basis, you know. And I still have this philosophy of, you know, work as little as possible and screw off as much as possible. You know, I figured, well, you know, why should that change? You know, and consequently, it started between us, you know, the battle. The quiet battle at first, you know, or you just kind of walk around each other a little more on eggshells every day, you know, depending on what's going on. Not that I didn't work at times, you know, there are times I go to work and do good for a month or two, you know, and not go on any stretches, but the disease is progressive, and, you know, those periods got shorter and shorter. And, you know, for me, when I would come back from, you know, drinking, and I'd have to come home and look at my wife and child, and I'd have to look at myself, and I didn't want to do that. So I get pissed at her, you know, for loving me. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but I used to get pissed at her for being there, you know, and then we'd argue about this, and then I'd feel guilty and remorseful, and then I'd kind of clean up and go back to work, you know. I didn't know that, you know, that was my pattern until I got here and did an inventory and took at what my life was like, but I used to work real hard, try and do good, build some money up, build some confidence up, you know, get her to love me again, you know, so we could look at each other in the face without hating each other, and then I have to drink for some reason. You know, I didn't understand what was going on with me. You know, in the beginning of my drinking, it was always just for fun, you know. We'd drink and it would have a good time, and then it just made no sense to me, alcoholism. Because things would be fine with me. Sometimes I'd be pissed and I'd drink, but other times life was perfectly normal. One time, example, I was cooking, it was her birthday, and I was home before her, and I was probably off that day, knowing me. But anyway, I was home, and I was frying some chicken for dinner, and then it dawned on me that I didn't have a birthday cake. So, you know, I shut the chicken off and ran up to the store to get a birthday cake. And the next thing I know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and the bar's closed. And I got, you know, I drive home, I got the cake in the car, and I come in the door, and I'm pissed at her because she's not up waiting for me to come home with her birthday cake. Like she knows, you know, that's what I'm doing. And so I woke her up, and you know, we had the birthday cake, and Jesus, you know, Jesus. But you know, she left the chicken on the stove, you know, which is, I have to mention that because I saw that. When I saw the chicken, I knew that for a brief second I looked at what I'd been doing, but I couldn't face it, and I just buried it. You know, it was real painful to see that I'd do something like that, and I didn't understand. It was real confusing to me. You know, last thing I remember was I picked up the cake and stopped by the bar to, you know, tell everyone how wonderful it was my wife's birthday, and I was getting her a cake, and that's the last thing I remember. And it went on from there, you know. It got more confusing as we went along, and somewhere in there I stopped drinking and started taking antabuse. And I've been taking Valium along with my alcohol for a long time, and I quit drinking and taking any kind of, you know, Valium or any kind of anything all at once, and you really shouldn't do that. I went through 9 very interesting days. Pretty scary. You know, there was dogs barking in the neighborhood, and I didn't know what the sound was. I was scared to death of the Brady Bunch on television. We had a 1-month-old baby at the time, and he was our second son, and he was sitting on the, you know, on the floor there in his little seat. And anytime he'd move, I would just like go out of my mind, start yelling for Larsine, and it just was real strange. But you know, my wonderful thinking at the time, I figured, well, that's what it's like when you aren't loaded. And I figured, well, that must be reality, you know. I really flipped out. Jeez. Anyway, I did that for about 9 days and didn't eat much and, you know, shook a lot. And my body was bouncing all over and sweat a lot. And I didn't know if I was asleep or awake. And, you know, let you know how things were in our house. She didn't notice anything funny with me, you know. Well, there he is again, you know, taking some stupid drug with his alcohol and, you know, who knows what he's doing. But, geez, it was just crazy. And I didn't know what was going on. I tried to go to work one day because that always seemed to make things better, you know. And so I got up in the morning and I decided I'd shave my beard that I had. And so I got out this electric razor and shaved a hole about this big in this beard that I had and went off to work, you know. Because it was too tense for me to try and stay there and shave it. You know, I had to, I was really quick, you know. And I show up to work. I work with my dad and my brothers. And to show you how screwed up our family is, no one said a word. No one said, what happened to your beard? Or, you know, why are you sweating when you aren't even moving? And, you know, why are you so jumpy? No one said a word, you know. We just went about our day. Jehoshaphat. And you know, then after that, I went through 2 years of just kind of on the edge. You know, that fear that I had that I was going to, like, blow apart any second from withdrawal was real close to just being there all the time. I went through 2 years of living like that. And, you know, at the end of those 9 days, I ran to the doctor and said, you know, I'm losing my mind. He said, no, you're not. Here's some Miltowns to take. So I kind of took those Miltowns along with my Anabuse for a couple years. And it was, yeah, what do you think? Yeah, it was just wonderful around the house. you know, Christ. You know, don't, if you, anyone here who quits drinking, don't do it unless you can get a program of some kind. You know, it's highly advisable. You know, because quitting drinking without any kind of tools to cope with our mind is just really ridiculous. Anyway, I went through 2 years of that fun. And, you know, off and on I would get real sloppy. I'd just take a lot of drugs, you know, but and you know, get comatose on the floor there. But what I really needed was a drink. You know, after a couple of years of doing this, I went to the doctor, and I was getting sick inside is what it was. I just really needed a drink, and they ran some tests for me, and they gave me a shot of sodium pentothal and Valium to run this tube down my throat to see it was hurting so much inside, and all my symptoms went away. And it scared the hell out of me, and it relieved me at the same time. You know, again, I had those mixed emotions, and, you know, I was real relieved, but then really scared at the same time. You know, and I got off the Anabuse, and we went to the doctor, and he talked to us about that, and he says, well, you know, you can wait, you know, 6 weeks or so, or whatever long it was, and then do some social drinking. And I never heard of that before, but it had drinking in it, and it was fine with me, so I started back drinking again. You know, I was really thirsty. And they, you know how they say that alcoholism is a progressive disease, and I'm here to attest to that, because I hadn't drank anything in 2 years, and it blew right by what I was like when I stopped drinking those 2 years previous. It was unbelievable. I started out trying to be real casual about it, you know, like it's no big deal. But it just got real bizarre. The next 9 months were mostly blackout. I would wake up and have a drink in my hand and drink it. Or I'd, you know, wake up or come to and have no drink and walk off and get it. And that's all I really remember of the next 9 months of our lives together. And I'm living at home with her and two kids while all this wonderful stuff's going on. You know, I remember being it's dark at night and just like one light on, and I come to out of my blackout, and it's like I'm riding around, you know, watching myself do this every so often. And I find myself screaming, this anger, you know, just in rage, screaming at the top of my lungs. And then that fast, flipping to hysterical laughing. You know, I started doing things like that, and it was pretty scary. And I didn't know what the hell to do. I was just along for the ride. You know, alcohol had me, and I didn't even know it. You know, I thought, oh, just one more time, I'm just crazy like I always thought, and this is just more proof of it. You know, it's just getting worse and worse. And I always had to drive when I drank, you know. And kind of scary, you know, of living like that and going out and driving your truck around. But I was out driving or drinking one night, and I got my truck and got arrested. Had another 502. I had three of those all together. And, you know, it wasn't the I don't know, that day wasn't such a bad day, I guess. You know, I was just drinking beer, I think, at some bar. And anyway, I came out of a blackout and I was in the police station. And, you know, I was taking the breath test. And what I heard was a voice. You know, all I can do is relate this, how it happened. You know, it's pretty strange to me. But I heard a voice say to stop fighting. And I didn't take it as coming from anyone that was like the policeman standing next to me or anything. You know, it was when I heard that voice, it came from a different place than I'd ever heard it. And when I heard it, just before I heard it, everything was kind of like quiet. And I heard that voice say that, and, you know, as I opened my eyes, came out of the black. It all happened really fast like that. And I accepted that I shouldn't be fighting whatever I was fighting. You know, that's all I need to know. I didn't think I accepted it or knew that I did. I just knew that when I heard that voice say to stop fighting, that I said yes somehow. And, you know, at the same time I had a realization that I was holding back on all kinds of things in my life, and whatever was going on with me, that knot that I had was kind of caused maybe by what I was doing or what I was fighting, even though I didn't know what any of this was. And so I agreed with that, and I blew on the breath thing and went back in my blackout. And, you know, that was the night of my last drunk. I haven't had a drink since. You know, I remember waking up in the on the nice cold green floor there in the Redondo Beach drunk tank. And, you know, I didn't know. It took me a long time in sobriety to really understand what went on that night, you know, to place some emphasis on what really happened to me, and how my higher power saved my butt. But anyway, I got up the next day, my Larson came to get me, and I just felt different. That's all I know. Usually when I get arrested, I'm all pissed because they've arrested a law-abiding citizen. All that I was out doing was drinking. You know, how dare they, you know? I didn't have anything to say this day. You know, I just was quiet. I call it, everything was like one-dimensional. Everything was just flat. No turmoil, no happiness, but just was kind of quiet. And we went truck hunting. You know, again, I got a few truck hunters in here. You guys ever done that? And found the truck and went out to breakfast. And she was different too that day, because she didn't give me any grief about what happened either. You know, it was a really unusual but wonderful time in our lives, and we didn't even know it. So I went home, went upstairs, and slept for a couple days, and then came downstairs and said, I need some help. And she said, here is a number for a hospital. And I called them, and that's a miracle. You know, normally it's just too much for me to handle to call anything, you know, any kind of responsibility is just incapable. And she's usually there to help me. But this time she wasn't. She said, here's a number. And I called them and went in there a few days later, and they put me in a psychiatric ward for a couple weeks. And the psychiatrist said to get in touch with your feelings, and I thought, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm here. You know, and I wandered around the psychiatric ward for a couple weeks. And the way I was mentally then, you know, I'm 32, and I have a general building contractor's license, and I have a wife and two children, and I'm walking around a psychiatric ward for a couple weeks thinking I have to be careful of what I think because they have cameras in the place, you know? That was just out there. Boy, oh boy. You know, that's my best shot of living, you know, without a higher power and Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's where I was. I did get grateful over there once I left the psychiatric ward and was introduced to the alcoholism side of the hospital there, where they introduced me to AA. That's all they worked on in there, was the steps and going to meetings and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank God for that, because I needed it. But, you know, once I look back at the psychiatric ward experience, I got really grateful that I was an alcoholic, because there's a lot of people in there who don't have any way to go. They really don't have any answers for those guys. You know, they just give them some more pills and let them shuffle down the hall. And I watched a little, you know, I was only there a couple weeks, but you could still see the march in and out there. And I got real grateful for a chance to recover, you know, from that experience. Like I said, lady came over and gave me the 20 questions just, you know, as I was finishing my little stay there. And that was the first time I was, you know, confronted with my drinking, or even, you know, ask any questions about it, so to speak. And we started doing the 20 questions, and she'd ask the question, you know, have you ever lost, you know, not gone to work because of drinking? And I started to say, well, and then I just looked at her, and she just looked at me, and I was able to, for the first time, start laughing about what I'd done. Well, for lack of a better word, for the bullshit answer I was trying to give her. You know, I'd start to say it, and then we'd look at each other, and I'd laugh about it. You know, and that was the beginning of this recovery for me, and it's fantastic. It was really, you know, it was a little scary, you know, trying to get real with how you look at things and what you've been doing. But at the same time, there was something about this lady. She was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she'd been sober about 20 years then, that made me feel okay, made me feel comfortable. And then right off the bat, they started talking about alcoholism, whatever the heck that was. I mean, it was killing me, and I was dying from it, and I didn't even know what it was. And they talked about how they were fearful, abnormally fearful in a lot of situations, and thinking negatively, and all this stuff fit for me, you know, and overreacting and being so self-centered. And it was scary news, but good news. You know, because I knew it fit. Every time they'd say something about that I could relate to, that knot in here would kind of like back off a little bit. You know, that still goes on with me today. You know, I'm still as alcoholic as ever, if not, I think I'm more alcoholic actually, because I'm older, but I still come back this over and over again to the program because you guys have what I need. And, you know, being able to start to relate to some people on the planet Earth besides myself was a real treat, you know. I knew you guys were like me, and I always thought that I was the only one who felt the way I felt, you know, until I met you people in Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, too, down the road, you know, from the beginning of my recovery. You know, I really took to it. I really needed it. I had a lot of confusion with God, you know, and they, you know, second step, God restore us to sanity. And then, I don't know, I was a couple weeks out of the hospital, I was upstairs in the bedroom there going over the steps, you know, trying to remember what they were. And I get to the third step, and I noticed I get really tense when I would try to, like, run through that. And what I noticed I was doing is I was saying, okay, you know, turn my will and my life over to God. And I was kind of like going like this with my will and life to give it to God and then running away because I get real intense when I would say that. And I noticed that, and I had a real turning point that day. I was able to see what I was doing, and it dawned on me that I needed this higher power to keep me sober, and my life depended on that. And so I talked to my God that I was afraid of and said, you know, I don't think this is going to be a working relationship if I'm afraid of you all the time, and I need your help to stay alive, so could you help me not be afraid of you? And I didn't get any booming answer, but I didn't get a no either. You know, I felt, this is fine. And from there it has progressed, you know. And like I say, early on in life, I really enjoyed the hookup I would get when I would feel close to my concept of a higher power. I call him God. And you guys have reintroduced me to that, you know, and it's just wonderful. You know, there's a lot to learn about myself, and the more I can learn about myself, the more I can let go and, you know, try and let God help me in my life. Or help me in my life. Yeah, he's there. I just have to stay out of the way. It's been real, real wonderful. There's so much to talk about up here. So much has gone on. I got sober in July 21st, 1979. We've had a lot of experiences since then. You know, she didn't go to Al-Anon for a while. That's her story. But you know, I was busy trying to stay sober, you know. She was going nuts and I didn't really notice it all that much because I was just flipped out trying to recover on my own. You know, occasionally I'd mention to her about Al-Anon, but I never harped on her about that. And, you know, right off the bat, when I got an AA, I got a sponsor right away and went to meetings all the time. Between 5 and 7 meetings a week for almost 3 years in there. And then, you know, I still go to all 3 or 4 depending on what's going on in our lives, sometimes more, sometimes less. But, you know, I don't want to die behind drinking. You know, there's nothing left in alcohol for me. You know, it wasn't an answer, looking back, it wasn't an answer for quite a while I was still going after it. And I don't want any more of that. You know, I don't want any more of that at all. I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous introducing me to the higher power again that has enabled me to live my life with some kind of, you know, I get up in the morning. We got up this morning, and I didn't get up with a knot in my stomach or with a start or what did I do last night or, oh, Christ, I'm alive again. You know, I'm still alive. I used to do that all the time. And, you know, I've been doing that for 17 years, and all I know is that you can't be drunk and grateful at the same time. So I was trying to take grateful for all of the things that come along because I could never do that before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, get out of bed, and we didn't yell at each other, and she wasn't on my back, and I wasn't on hers, and it was just, it's a nice way to live, fantastic way to live. Jeez, I was going to say something, and it just went away. How unusual, huh? Jeez. It's really nice, you know, to come with a group of people where I can be myself, you know, and it's really wonderful. I'm truly blessed. We're truly blessed for both these programs. Once you started going to Al-Anon, it was really, you know, it was really good because we had a program we could, you know, something we could share more, you know. It was a little painful, actually, at first, you know, because I couldn't get away with as nice stuff as I used to because she was paying attention now. And, you know, but it's okay, you know. Amends to Larsena, I didn't make a real specific amend, you know. At the time, I just told her I was sorry for all the stuff I've done. But through the years we've been together and the two of us working a program, we've got to hit on all the points and things that, you know, have gone on in the earlier years and take care of that stuff, you know. In the beginning, I didn't do my fourth step till I was 3 years sober. You know, that's just, I would write and wouldn't be able to write anymore, and I still had a feeling inside that I wasn't finished. So I just kept pursuing it. It wasn't a real long thing, but it got me clean. In the process of the two of us doing that, you know, we've been able to get to know each other pretty well. And that's pretty good most of the time, huh? It's actually quite wonderful. And we've been able to take this program home and apply it to our children, you know, as best we can, and that's a really hard area because, well, you know how we are. And but at the same time, it's been real gratifying because these programs, we've been able to be there for our kids when they need us, you know. And it always comes when we don't expect it, you know, periods of growth with those guys. You know, when you think it's things are darkest, things lighten up. I don't know what else to say. I think that's probably enough out of me. I know hopefully I got sober long enough for you guys. I don't know. I get real nervous, you know. But I just want to thank you for giving my life back to me. You know, the world is a good place to be in now. Before I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to wake up. And, you know, I was incapable of believing in any purpose for being alive. You know, I had plenty of love around me. I had my wife and my kids, and that would be good for a while, but then it would always go away. You know, somehow I'd sabotage it mentally or emotionally and just, you know, just ruin the whole deal. And I never understood what was going on until I got here, and you guys have taught me about myself. And I'm really grateful for that, and thank you for having us. Okay.